Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued. Today we're doing a deep dive into National Coming Out Day, which is October 11th. We looked at some really interesting sources focused on themes like kindness, visibility, even glitter, actually.
Yeah, that framing was quite something. But our goal here is to unpack it, right? To get to the practical stuff, the insights and the history, you need to understand what coming out really involves.
And also why being supportive isn't just nice. It actually creates these like big cultural shifts.
Yeah, exactly. It ripples outwards.
So let's start with the basics. Where did this day even come from? It wasn't just picked randomly.
No, not at all. National Coming Out Day started back in 1988. It was specifically chosen to mark the first anniversary of the 1987 March on Washington for lesbian and gay rights. A huge event.
Okay, so that context is important. It grounds it in activism and visibility.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to the core idea, the fundamental premise we saw again and again in the materials. It's that when people personally know someone who's LGBTQIA+, could be a family member or a coworker, anyone that connection tends to dismantle fear.
It makes it harder to rely on stereotypes, I guess.
Exactly. Humanity kind of takes over. And the sources were clear, this coming out thing.
Yeah.
It's usually not a single movie moment.
Right, more like a process.
Yeah, like crossing a series of thresholds. People often do it multiple times in different parts of their lives with different people. It's ongoing.
So if visibility is key, how did the sources link that act of, well, becoming visible to someone's actual well-being?
They use this really powerful metaphor, framing coming out as an act of offering.
An offering? How so?
Like someone is handing you something really precious and vulnerable. Maybe it's their true name, their pronouns, maybe it's talking about who they love or just their core identity. It's tender.
And the way you receive that offering, that's crucial.
It's immediate, life-altering, the sources said. Meeting that truth with warmth, with affirmation, it lets the person, breathe. Literally breathe easier and grow brighter.
And the flip side, rejection or even just debating it.
That dims the lights, as one source put it. It introduces shame.
Ah, shame. That came up a lot.
Yes. Described as the great thief of life. Think about the energy it takes to hide, to constantly be on guard, waiting for a negative reaction.
Exhausting.
Totally. So acceptance, it frees up all that energy. It allows for confidence, connection.
Yeah.
Just growth.
The personal stories really drove this home. There was Jay, 17, non-binary, uses they-them pronouns.
Right, Jay coming out to their aunt over tea, apparently quite nervous.
And the aunt's response was just perfect.
It really was. Simple, kind. She just said, thank you for trusting me. What name do you want me to use? That's it.
No drama, no making it about her feeling.
None, just direct affirmation. And Jay said later, that was the moment their shoulders literally dropped. Home felt safe then. A place for rest and courage.
Wow, okay. Then there was Marisol, 34, bisexual. She came out to her long-term partner.
Yeah, and she was bracing for suspicion, maybe questions about their past relationship history,
But that's not what happened.
No, her partner responded with curiosity. Asked, how can I support you? They actually talked it through.
And the result?
The relationship got deeper, stronger. Marisol described feeling more present, more honest, more alive. Acceptance deepened the connection instead of breaking it.
That's powerful. And then Andre, 62, gay, who waited until he retired.
A long wait. His big moment of acceptance wasn't some huge declaration, but something quieter. Bringing his boyfriend to Sunday dinner for the first time.
How did that go?
His sister met them at the door, hugged them both, and just said, you've always had a seat at this table, and so does the person you love.
You've always had a seat. Just simple belonging.
Exactly. Andre talked about feeling like he'd held his breath for 60 years. That sentence, that was permission to finally breathe.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference between being questioned and just being welcomed.
That difference, that impact. It's not just feelings, right? The sources brought in data.
Oh, yeah. This is where it gets dark. The link between acceptance and actual, measurable well-being is incredibly strong. It's not subtle stuff.
What did the numbers show?
Well, supportive environments, clearly lower stress, depression, anxiety, all that.
Yeah.
But the really shocking statistic, the one that just stops you in your tracks, came from a major study.
Okay.
It found that LGBTQ youth, who have just one single affirming adult in their lives, their risk of attempting suicide is nearly 40% lower.
40%. Just from one person saying, I see you, I support you.
40%. It's staggering.
Yeah.
It really underscores that this isn't trivial.
And it ties into what the source has said about language itself, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yep. That language literally reshapes the nervous system. Using someone's chosen name, their correct pronouns, consistently. It's more than just politeness.
How so?
It reduces the need for that constant hypervigilance, that bracing for impact we talked about. When you hear your name, your pronouns used correctly, your nervous system can actually relax a bit. You're not fighting little battles all day long.
Which frees up mental energy for other things.
Right. For living. For thriving.
Okay, so that leads us into needing some critical thinking tools. The source has tackled 5 common ideas, or maybe myths, that tend to pop up. Our job here is just to report on the counterarguments presented.
Exactly. We're just laying out what the source has said.
Yeah.
So the first one they addressed is this idea that being LGBTQIA+ is just a phase or some kind of trend.
Right. You hear that sometimes. What was the counter?
Basically, that human diversity in who we love, how we understand our gender, isn't new. It's documented across cultures, across centuries. More visibility today doesn't mean it's a novelty. It's not being invented by social media.
Okay, makes sense. What was the second idea?
Idea 2. That biology definitively says there are only 2 sexes or genders.
The biology argument.
Yeah, the sources pointed out that biologically, sex characteristics are actually pretty complex. You have intersex variations, for example. Biology is, quote, messy and marvelous.
So it's not as simple as XX or XY sometimes.
Correct. And critically, they stressed that gender identity is understood as this deeply felt internal experience and also a social role. It's not just about chromosomes. It's more complex than that basic binary suggests.
Got it. Third idea.
This was really common. That identity is a choice.
As in, people choose to be gay or trans or bi.
Right. And the sources clarified this really well. They said the choice isn't about who you are, your orientation, or your gender identity. That's generally understood as innate. The choice is about whether it's safe enough to tell people.
So the choice is about disclosure, about visibility, not identity itself.
Exactly. It's a risk calculation, right. Basically. Is it safe to say this out loud here, now, to this person?
Okay. Fourth point.
Idea 4. The belief that tough love or conversion efforts actually work or are somehow beneficial.
This refers to trying to change someone's orientation or gender identity.
Yes. And the sources were absolutely clear here. Rejection isn't love. Conversion efforts are widely condemned by medical and mental health organizations. They lack credible scientific support, they fail ethical scrutiny, and they're deeply harmful. They increase trauma and risk.
So unequivocally rejected by the source material.
Unequivocally. And finally, idea 5. That respecting someone's name or pronouns is asking for special treatment.
Like it's some kind of extra burden.
Yeah. The counterargument was pretty straightforward. It's basic human dignity. It's like using someone's preferred title, doctor or miss, or just making an effort to pronounce their name correctly.
It's just respect.
It's just respect. The source is really emphasized. You don't need to fully understand everything or win some kind of debate to simply choose to be respectful and caring. Having these counterpoints just helps you navigate those conversations if they come up.
Okay, that's really helpful context. So moving from understanding to action, let's say someone comes out to you. How can you be the person they're hoping you'll be in that moment?
The source has actually laid out a kind of script, a really practical 4-step approach.
Oh, great. Let's hear it.
Okay, step 1, thank them. Yeah. Simple as that. Thank you for trusting me with this. It acknowledges the vulnerability.
Nice. Step 2.
Affirm them. Something like, I believe you, or I'm so glad you shared this part of yourself with me. Just direct validation.
Okay, thank, affirm. Step 3.
Move straight to support. Ask what they need. How can I support you right now? Or is there anything you need from me? Put the focus on them.
And the last step seems important.
Critical. Step 4. Follow their lead on privacy. Ask, is this something you're sharing widely, or is this just between us for now? Respect their boundaries about who knows.
Thank, affirm, ask, follow their lead on privacy. That seems doable. Very clear.
Yeah, it takes the guesswork out of it, which is great.
What about beyond that first moment? How do you offer ongoing, consistent support?
Consistency is the magic word here. Okay. First, use their name and pronouns every time. Make the effort.
What if you mess up? It happens.
It does. If you slip, just correct yourself quickly and move on. Like, oh, she's sorry, they will be here soon. Don't make a huge deal out of it. Don't send her your apology. Just fix it and keep going.
Okay, quick correction. Move on. What else?
Having their back. Especially when they're not in the room.
How so?
If you hear someone else misgendering them or making assumptions, step in. Kindly, confidently correct them. Actually, Jay uses they-them pronouns.
Why is that so important?
Because if allies are silent, it signals to the person who came out that they still have to do all the work, that they're still alone in defending themselves. It undermines that feeling of safety.
Right, it reinforces that hypervigilance.
Exactly. And one more thing. Keep learning, but don't make them your teacher.
Meaning?
Don't bombard them with basic questions. Use Google, look up resources from reputable LGBTQ+ organizations, do your own homework. Don't put the burden of educating you entirely on them.
That's a really good point. Okay, so we know what to do. What about the big don'ts? Things to actively avoid.
The sources highlighted four main pitfalls. First, don't interrogate them. Avoid invasive questions like, are you sure? Or when did this start? Or asking for intimate details.
Respect their privacy. Got it.
Second, don't center your own feelings. Avoid saying things like, this is hard for me, or I'm confused. Their coming out isn't about your emotional processing. Keep the focus on supporting them.
Okay, no interrogation. Don't make it about you. Third,
don't make your support conditional. No, I support you, but only if you don't transition, or but only if you don't tell grandma, or but only if you act a certain way. Real support is unconditional.
Right. And the last one,
don't treat their identity like it's up for debate. It's their truth, not a topic for discussion or argument. Just accept it.
Okay, those are really clear guardrails. Now let's shift focus for a moment. What about the person who is thinking about coming out? What advice did the sources offer them?
The overwhelming message was, you are in charge. You set the pace, you set the boundaries. It's your story to tell or not tell on your terms.
That sounds empowering. Any practical tips?
Definitely. Planning can help. Like, choose your first audience carefully. Maybe start with someone you feel pretty confident will react well. Build some positive momentum.
Makes sense, like testing the water.
Yeah, and have support lined up beforehand. Maybe tell a trusted friend, hey, I'm gonna talk to my parents tonight. Can you be available to chat afterwards? Have someone on call.
Good idea. What about setting boundaries?
Be ready to state them clearly. I wanna share this with you, but I'm not ready to answer a lot of questions right now. Or, this is just for you to know at the moment. You have the right to control the information flow.
And crucially, considering safety.
Absolutely paramount.
Yeah.
If coming out could put your housing, your job, or your physical safety at risk, you need to strategize very carefully. Look into local resources, maybe legal protections. Timing is critical if safety is a concern.
That's a tough reality.
It is. But underlying all of that strategy is a core affirmation the sources kept returning to. Your truth, your existence, is not something you need to apologize for. You don't owe anyone a defense brief, a justification for simply being who you are. Hold on to that.
Your existence is not an apology.
I like that. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the individual level, that one-on-one interaction. How does this scale up? What's the ripple effect?
This is where it connects to broader culture change. Every single one of those supportive conversations, those moments of acceptance at the kitchen table or the water cooler, they add up.
How so?
They normalize dignity. When using someone's correct name and pronouns becomes just normal, when affirming identities is the default, it chips away at the foundations of prejudice and discrimination. It reduces harm at scale, as the sources put it.
So individual kindness has some systemic consequences.
Absolutely. Conversely, when institutions or laws legitimize exclusion or shame, they basically give permission for bystanders to look away, or worse. That's when violence and despair find more room to grow.
What does supportive infrastructure look like then, institutionally? The sources gave clear examples. In schools, respecting names and pronouns, yes, but also teaching inclusive and accurate health and history and actively stopping bullying. Zero tolerance for harassment.
Okay.
Healthcare, evidence-based affirming care. Doctors and therapists who are trained in LGBTQ+ needs, accessible services, insurance coverage that doesn't discriminate. Treating the whole person respectfully.
Workplaces.
Clear non-discrimination policies that are actually enforced. Visible signs of allyship from leadership. Benefits packages, health insurance, parental leave that reflect the reality of diverse families.
And laws.
The mandate was pretty simple. Laws should protect people from harm, discrimination, violence. They shouldn't be policing people's bodies, who they love, or which bathroom they use. Protection, not policing.
When all this happens, when inclusion becomes the norm, What's the benefit to the whole community?
It's huge. People don't have to waste energy hiding or fighting for basic respect. They don't have to, quote, split themselves in two to belong.
So they can bring their whole selves to work, to the community.
Exactly. Talent sticks around. Creativity flourishes. Communities become more vibrant, more resilient, because everyone feels safe enough to contribute fully. Everyone benefits when we make space for everyone.
It comes back to that idea of breathing easier.
It really does, on a community-wide level.
Which brings us back to the everyday things. The sources mentioned micro-celebrations.
Yeah, I loved that idea. Acknowledging those milestones, even small ones. Like literally getting cupcakes when someone starts using a new name. Or just a heartfelt note saying, I see you, I support you.
Small gestures, big impact, and visible signals too.
Definitely. A little rainbow pin on your bag, an ally sticker on your laptop, inclusive language on a form. These are quiet cues that signal safety. They tell people, you can probably breathe easier here.
So as we wrap this up, there was a core idea, almost like a blessing in the source material that really stood out.
About transforming identity.
Yeah. From a problem to be solved into a gift to be received.
It reframes the whole experience. For the person coming out, embracing their truth is the gift they give themselves and potentially the world.
And for those of us on the receiving end of that truth,
our job is to receive that gift with care, to be that safe harbor, to consciously make our own spaces, our homes, our workplaces, our communities, part of that widening circle of safety. Remember that 40% statistic. One person can make a life-saving difference.
So the challenge for you listening right now is to think about that. What's one tangible thing you can do today or this week?
Yeah, at your own dinner table, in your next meeting, how can you actively normalize dignity? How can you ensure your first reflex is kindness, your second, maybe curiosity, and your third, supportive action?
A powerful thought to leave us with.
Let's aim for that.
Happy National Coming Out Day. Let's keep working to open those doors wider.